thank you for listening to another Hastings NAS podcast. We are so pleased that you have shown interest in listening to this podcast, and we pray that it is edifying and beneficial for you. You can watch us live every Sunday morning on Facebook, facebook.com/HastingsNAS. And if you are so inclined, you can support the ministries of the church by going to hastingsnas.org/give. Hope you enjoy this sermon. Grace and peace. Church, I'm going to ask you to stand again because we're going to read the gospel, and out of reverence for the gospel reading, the Sermon on the Mount, would you stand and listen to the words? Jesus is beginning the longest discourse we have on record in the New Testament, his Sermon on the Mount. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything but is thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hidden. No one, after lighting a lamp under the bushel, puts it under the bushel basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to fulfill. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth pass away, not one letter, not one stroke of a letter will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the world. Thanks be to God. You may be seated. You want to go back to children's church just a moment? You already know what I'm doing, right? All I got to do is this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. You gonna put it under a bushel?
No.
No. I'm gonna let it shine. We're not gonna sing the whole song, but I mean, you just can't not when you read that portion of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is talking about a city on a hill, city on a hill church. It was, if I'm getting my timeline right, it was over a year ago now that we got struck by lightning. Again, I think it's happened multiple times, and I think I know the timeline. We've been struck multiple times since Kayla and I have lived here in 8 years. This building has been struck by lightning multiple times. It's always fun to do the insurance report on that. I'm very thankful that the board secretary took care of that this time. But I was shocked when we got hit. See what I did there? Actually, it was Rob Simons who was almost shocked when we got struck by lightning. I hope I'm not telling anything to your family that they didn't already know, Rob, but you were helping us move. We were moving out of the parsonage right there, and it was raining. I think this is the timeline. Am I right about this, Rob? You were helping us. You were walking over from the church to the parsonage when the lightning struck the church. And I was in the garage of the house right next door, and Rob was like on the pavement in between the church and the house when lightning hit. And we were all like, whoa, that was a big one. And I saw Rob's hair sticking up on the top of his head. That's a joke because he's bald. It fell out because of that, yeah. I'm glad Rob is okay, but I thought, why do we keep getting hit? And then it hit me. We are the church on a hill. We get struck by lightning because we are literally in the tallest building in the city limits. The highest elevation. We are a city on a hill church. Literally. You go north, you're going downhill. You go south, you're going downhill. You go into Indian Hills, you're going downhill. We are sitting on an elevated space in our community. It doesn't really feel like it, though. Now, of course, Jesus isn't talking, when he says you're to be a city on a hill, he's not talking about being the tallest or the highest building in the community. That's not what it means to be a city on a hill. To be a city on a hill is to be the light of the world, as he said, to be the salt of the earth. What I find really fascinating about this passage, though, in this Sermon on the Mount, when Jesus is preaching to the crowd, is the question isn't, for Jesus at least, how to become salty or how to become light. Jesus doesn't say, here's how to become the salt of the earth. Here's how you can become the light of the world. That's implied. Jesus says that's already the case. Did you catch that? Jesus is talking to all of this crowd, these people who have been following him, and he says to them, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Or let me say this a better way. He says to them, y'all are the salt of the earth. Y'all are the light of the world. This is plural, okay? He's talking to a people. Y'all are the light of the world. We tend to individualize things and privatize things. Jesus doesn't. So Jesus says it's already there. The salt's there. The light's there. The question isn't how to become the salt of the earth. Jesus says we're already that. So let's begin there, okay? I'm telling you, y'all are the light of the world. Okay? It's already established. And that's revealed in the way the language is laid out. This is a pretty hard text to translate. I'm not going to get into the Greek. We're not going to do an exegesis right now, but just trust me that this is a hard text to translate. Because when Jesus talks about letting your light shine, the command has an object, is directed at something, saying to let your light, let it shine. What's really interesting, though, is that the command is not directed at the people. The command in the original languages is directed at the light itself. So it's not saying, you need to let the light shine. It's like Jesus is saying, light, you need to not be hidden. Light, you need to be on display. He's speaking to the light as if Jesus is saying, the light of God is already within y'all. Light, keep on shining. Keep on shining. The question isn't how to become salty and bright. That'd be a good sermon title right there. Salty and bright. Jesus doesn't tell us how to become salt and light. He says it's already there. The question is, what do you do with your already salty status? What do you do with your already bright disposition? You see, if we already are the salt of the earth, and if we already are the light of the world, how do we let the flavor out? How do we let the light shine? Another way of asking the question might be, what does it mean to be a city on a hill church? Not just sitting on top of this hill. Well, I think Jesus indicates what this means when he shifts his sermon right there in the middle. He's shifting from the Beatitudes there, and then he goes and he shifts to the Law and the Prophets. I don't know about you. Did you feel a little bit of whiplash when I was reading Matthew 5 there? I mean, just think about it. He goes from let your light shine before others to do not think that I've come to abolish the law, just in one breath. And it's like, that's a rough transition. In learning how to preach, you talk a lot, in homiletics, you talk a lot about how do you make that transition from one point to another. You don't want to give the congregation whiplash, and Jesus doesn't care about that. It's just so abrupt. He's just saying, hey, let your light shine, and I'm not here to destroy the law. But maybe he does that because there's more of a connection than we might see at first glance. Maybe this is not a hard break and Jesus isn't changing topics. Maybe Jesus makes this apparently abrupt shift because the Law and the Prophets reveal to this crowd what it means to be salt and light, how to practice your saltiness and your brightness. Because what are the Law and the Prophets? What summarizes the Law and the Prophets? What did Jesus say to a lawyer when he was asked the question, "What is the greatest commandment?" He said, "Well, the greatest commandment is this: love the Lord your God with your whole self, and love your neighbor as yourself." That's the summary of the law, which, if you look at Isaiah 58, is really what Isaiah was saying. That's what the prophet was saying. Did you catch what was going on in Isaiah 58? God is saying to the people of Israel, you keep asking to hear my voice. You keep wanting to be in my presence. You delight in festivals. You delight in your fasting. You are so excited to be pious. You keep fasting, and yet you're still not seeing. You keep humbling yourself, but you're still not noticing. God is saying, you fast only to quarrel. You can't even get along with each other. And then you turn and you look at the world around you, you look at the community around you, and you condemn them. You lead with a fist. How do you expect to hear my voice when you keep fighting amongst yourselves? How do you expect to hear my voice when you keep beating down those who are different than you? You see, God is saying to the people of Israel in Isaiah 58, you love your piety. You really want to worship well. You want to fast and you want to pray. You want to have your assemblies. But when you fast, you're doing so at the expense of other people. The way you're practicing your piety is actually not dignifying other people. Yahweh says to Israel, is that the fast you want? Is that the fast you think I want? Yahweh says, this is the fast that I choose. Here's the fast for you, my people. Loose the bonds of injustice. Break the yoke of the oppressed. Feed the hungry. Bring the homeless, hear this, into your home. Clothe the naked. Yahweh doesn't tell people they need to check visas before caring for them. Yahweh doesn't tell people that he needs to check their unemployment status before they can get some help. Yahweh says, basically, there are people in need. Love your neighbor. Care for those who aren't being cared for. Now, I don't know about you, but I have a tendency, I won't speak for you, I'll speak for me, I have a tendency when I read lists like these to think that if we're not doing these specific things, then we're failing or missing the mark in some ways, that this is in some way a comprehensive list, and maybe that's true, but I think that it's what's maybe more true is the case that when the prophet Isaiah talks about these specific groups of people and these specific practices, he's making a broader point. This is not comprehensive, and this is not limited to just these specific things. I think the prophet Isaiah is saying, hey, listen, care for the people who've been overlooked. See the people who haven't been seen. Hear the people who haven't been heard. Clothe and care for the people who aren't. This is caring for the forgotten, the ignored, the marginalized. And I'm not gonna tell you not to. Maybe God is telling you to do the specific task of opening your home to the homeless. Maybe God is calling you to do that. I'm not going to say that God won't, but maybe what God is saying through the prophet Isaiah here is that if you want to hear from the Lord, simply fasting longer is not going to cut it. If you want to be in the presence of God, can I say this? Making sure you're not late for church every Sunday morning is not going to cut it. It's insufficient. I heard that, Art. The prophet Isaiah is saying, you can bring me all the best music you got. Look at your neighbors. You're quarreling amongst yourselves. How can you hear my voice when you won't listen to the voice of one another? Maybe what God is saying through the prophet Isaiah here is that if you want to hear from God, look to the margins. Live with them. Don't avoid them. Don't participate in dehumanizing systems that strip them of dignity. Break the yoke of the oppressor. How do we participate in breaking the yoke of oppressive systems in our world? Do not share in these systems, because the people that are being marginalized bear the image of the Creator just as much as you do. And then what does the prophet say next after this list of ways to care for the marginalized? What does God say through the prophet Isaiah? Here's where I think we see a connection to Matthew chapter 5. The prophet says, then your light will break forth like the dawn. Then your light will break forth. And then your healing will spring up quickly. Maybe that is what it means to be a city on a hill church. Maybe that is why we read Isaiah 58 with Matthew chapter 5, because I think that we think functionally to be the salt of the earth and to be the light of the world is to be a salt lick or a lighthouse. Salt licks are salty, right? They got all the flavor, and those animals love to come from out in the field where they've been grazing, and then they come and they lick the salt lick, and it is so satisfying, right? We think it's a lighthouse where people who are lost are going to see the light, and they're just going to make their way. That is, if I can be frank and if I can be confessional, how often do we operate in a way that because we have salt and because we have light, we just assume people are going to be drawn to us? Like moths to a flame. We just think that because we're salty and because we got light, people are going to show up. Maybe none of you think that. I know I do, okay? I gotta confess, I just so frequently wonder why everyone in town isn't here for worship every single week, okay? I love this place. I love what we do week in and week out because I love you. I look at this place and I'm like, we have a great church. We have a great church. Our hospitality is second to none. Our music is rich and engaging and inviting. We have a worship service that I believe in. I believe in our worship service, and I believe that our worship is a practice in discipleship. Now, this is not to say that I think we all do all things perfectly. There are certainly opportunities for growth, as they say. But I think that we are doing so well with the resources that are available to us. And I'm like proud of this church. Like, I look at this congregation and I say, this is wonderful. Why isn't everyone else here? Come on. We're on top of the hill after all. Why isn't everybody flocking to Hastings Church of the Nazarene at 10:45 on Sunday mornings? We are a city on a hill. Right? If we're the salt of the earth, if we're the light of the world, why, how come people aren't coming to us like cows to a salt lick? Well, maybe it's because people don't want to be referred to as cows coming to a salt lick. What if being the salt of the earth and being the light of the world means that we do not exercise our saltiness by being stagnant? That is, just sitting there waiting for hungry souls to come to us. If we are the light of the world, if we are a city on a hill, maybe we don't display our light like a light attracting bugs, drawing them in from faraway places. See, maybe that's not what it means to be salt and light according to Jesus. Because as Jesus indicates, salt is best when it is poured out. Jesus says light is utilized best in dark places. The light goes to the dark. It is not stagnant and waiting for others to come to it. Instead, what if it means pursuing the flavorless places of our community? What if it looks like going to the dark corners of our world? Well, then maybe our light will break forth like the dawn. And maybe we will experience healing quickly. Now, I'm about to wrap up my sermon, but I'm stuck on this phrase. Then your healing shall spring up quickly. Then your healing shall spring up quickly. Now, I told you how much I love this church and I love this place and I love all of you. But I think we'd be kidding ourselves if we didn't think we needed some healing in some places. I think we'd be kidding ourselves if we thought that there weren't places within our church that could use some bandages. It was a few years ago now that my grandpa got his knees replaced. Grandpa Roy, some of you might remember about 8 years ago when he came and spoke to the church. He and Shirley. It's a couple years ago in his late 70s or early 80s when he got both knees replaced. Not at the same time. But do you know what's crazy about a knee replacement? I could not believe this. Do you know what they do? Like an hour or two after surgery, do you know what they do for people who get this bionic leg? You walk! Like, right away! He had some serious physical therapy to go through for sure, but almost immediately after his entire knee was deconstructed and put back together with nuts and bolts attached to his bones and the flesh put back over this fake leg, what did they do but have him walk? I mean, I would think you'd want to give it a minute. Like, make sure everything's good to go, okay? But physical therapists are adamant. When you get your knee replaced, you gotta walk. Why? Because they've learned that early walking after a knee replacement does really important things. Three things that I found in my research. I'm not a physical therapist, okay? Number one, it reduces your length of stay at the hospital. If you can get up and walk quicker, you're going to get out of the hospital sooner. Number two, it decreases the amount of pain you're going to have. You work out that new leg and you're going to have less pain in the long term. And number three, it increases how much you'll be able to move your knee after surgery. If you move sooner, you'll move better. So basically, if you want to heal well after a knee replacement, what do? You walk. You move. You go. Sometimes there's a healing that happens when the thing that was broken is activated. When it's moved, when it's exercised. Do we want the light of God to shine through us? Do you want to participate in the healing of our church and of our land?
Yes.
I'm preaching better than you're talking, okay? If we want to do that, then we got to move. We cannot be a salt lick or a lighthouse that just draws people in. You don't take a light and hide it. We gotta go. We gotta move. Church, did you hear about an opportunity to do that already today?
Yeah.
We already did. You talk about providing home for the homeless, who are the most vulnerable, but children in our society. And we partner with an organization that is committed to ending child homelessness.
and we are doing the simple task of making meals.
We can care for people by making meals. We can participate in family promise. But also, church, this is why I'm so excited about the English Language Learners Program, a ministry that's starting through Hastings Church of the Nazarene, through Pastor Bikram and Ruby. This is the first adult English language class in Hastings. This is the only adult English language class in Hastings. There are people in our community and around our city, I've spoken to them, who feel like they can't get connected, they can't get integrated into our community because they don't speak English. And because our community is not multilingual. I'll tell you, it's going to take a lot more work to make our community multilingual than it is to go, than it is to help people learn how to speak English. The first class takes place on February 16th. Pastor Bikram is starting the English Language Learners Program on February 16th, and it's meeting at West Michigan Works downtown. We're partnering with West Michigan Works to say, hey, this is in the community for the community. This is the ministry of Hastings NAS, but this is for the community. And while we might not be doing literally what Isaiah 58 said, she's responding. While we might not be checking off the list of Isaiah 58, understanding the spirit of what the prophet is saying here, this is an opportunity for us to be promoting equity and reconciliation and justice in our community. It is a way of seeing people who are largely ignored. It is a way of interacting with people who are forgotten. It is a way of giving dignity to people who are marginalized. If there is healing that needs to take place within our community, maybe the path towards healing isn't by examining and picking at the wound, but by being the people that God has called us to be. A people, as the prophet says, who pursue justice and reconciliation, who plead the case of the overlooked. And maybe one of the ways we will accomplish this is by helping people within our communities learn a skill that will help them to integrate better into our community. So I'm telling you now, if you haven't talked to Pastor Bikram about how to be involved with ELL, the English Language Learners Program, I would encourage you to do so. Find ways to be connected with that. I mean, what if we overwhelmed Pastor Bikram with support in this? What if he was like, I don't know what to do with all this support? What if we overwhelmed this ELL program with prayer and the resources it needs to do this ministry in the community? And what if that is what leads to healing? What if that is what leads to a bright light like the dawn? What if ministries like this and others that are already present, or that maybe you've been dreaming or pursuing that have not yet been realized, what if those are the ways in which our light breaks forth? What if being active in and for the community is how we exercise our saltiness, is how we bring flavor? The fast I choose is this, says God. Loose the bonds of injustice. Break the yoke of the oppressed. Feed the hungry. Meet the tangible needs of your people. Church, my first year here in Hastings, I have to report every year to the denomination numbers. I give these exciting reports every year. I have two lists that I have to report: member list and responsibility list. My first year here, I put on my membership list what our membership was, and I put on my responsibility list 7,000.
the district Church of the Nazarene got that report. They called me. They said, "Oh, we don't think you filled this out right, Danny. Did you understand the form? We know you're a new pastor. This is the first time you're doing it." I said, "I understood the form. I knew what I was doing." They said, "You put 7,000. I said, "Yeah, that's the population of Hastings. What's my responsibility? You gave me a responsibility list. I feel responsible for this community." I said, "You do whatever you need to do with those numbers. You can change. I give you permission to change my report, but that's my responsibility." Church, it's your responsibility too. And maybe it's not 7,000. Maybe it's 55,000. Maybe it's all of Barry County. Maybe it's where you live in Freeport or Saranac. And maybe this is what Jesus meant when he called his followers to be the salt of the earth. Maybe this is what Jesus meant when he called his followers to be the light of the world. Maybe this is what it means to be a city on a hill, church. This is the good news of Jesus Christ for us today.